This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the Golf Podcast ahead of what is a huge week in the world of sport, not just golf this week. We've got the Masters coming up, the first major championship of the season. Dave Kellner here alongside Dave Tindall to go through this major championship with a fine tooth comb on this podcast. Dave Tindall, is this the most excited you've ever been about a major championship?
No, because I'm not going. But I know what you're saying. Pretty much so, given the fact that there's so many, isn't there, at the front of the market. Normally you think there's three or four really obvious ones and everyone else has got a few, you know, maybes. But there's so many here, you just keep going down. You get to about 20 to 1 before you find any sort of doubt.
We are betting 10 to 1 the field here with William Hill. Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy at the top of the betting. Justin Thomas is 11 to 1. Dustin Johnson 12 to 1. Bubba Watson is 14s. Justin Rose in the betting at 14 to 1. Tiger Woods is 14 to 1. Jason Day and Phil Mickelson both 18 to 1. Paul Casey 20 to 1. And it's 25 to 1 and bigger the rest. So at time of recording, 10 players separated by 10 points in the betting market here with William Hill. One of the most wide open major championships from a betting perspective in many a year. 50 odds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6 and 7 here with William Hill as well. And we have Super Bet Boost in operation. So you get 3 bet boosts on the outright market for the Masters, where you can pump up your odds on a selection pre-tournament. So that's exciting, and it's a serious boost in price as well here with William Hill if you're using that Bet Boost application. There are so many converging storylines going into the first major, Dave, and I suppose the biggest of which is the greatest of all time, arguably the greatest of all time, Tiger Woods, coming into a major with a genuine chance to win for the first time in a good few years, searching for his 15th major a decade after his 14th arrived in the US Open in 2008. And he's got a genuine chance.
He has got a genuine chance. I think that's fairly common opinion. I'm probably on the I don't think so kind of side of things. My argument would be, Dave, that, so you say Tiger hasn't won a major for 10 years, but he's not won the Masters for 13 years. And you've got to think that he's not been injured for all of those, has he? I mean, he had a lot of years as number one where he didn't win the Masters. So I just wonder. I read he put a book out, I think it was with Lorne Rubenstein, I think was the author, called Tiger and the Masters. And when you read that, you kind of think he really wishes it had stayed like it was in 1997. You can't blame him for that because he won by 12. But I think he does feel that he had a massive advantage then. It was still probably there 2001-2 when he won. But as they lengthened the course and did little tweaks, you can sort of, when you're reading it, I think it comes out that he doesn't think, however much he'll talk a good story this week, but I don't think in his heart he really believes he's got the advantage he used to have at this course. And that's, you know, that's borne out. I mean, Mickelson's won it twice since Tiger's won it.
Yeah.
It's just a lot. It's a lot. I said, come back to the point, he had a lot of chances to win it when he was still out clear of the rest of the world, and he didn't. So can he do that this year when everyone has caught him, gone past him? And I know then he's come back to life and all that, but can it? Oh, I don't know. Not for me at 14s anyway. I think that's the main point.
We'll talk about the other leading contenders in detail shortly, but let's talk about the golf course first of all. Augusta National, a golf course like no other, one that is always presented immaculately and tests the game's best. Measures just over 7,400 yards nowadays, plays to a par of 72 with the traditional quota of 4 par 3s and 4 par 5s. Greens are lightning quick, and the topography of the course means you get uneven lies on the fairways. They are commonplace. But rather than take my word for it, let's hear from a man that's been to Augusta National and managed to drop the fact he'd been to Augusta National in subtly within the first 30 seconds of the podcast, Dave Tindall.
Yeah, in a sort of backhanded way, didn't I? Yeah. I'm not going this year, but I have been in previous years. Yeah, I was very, very... I mean, it's a bucket list thing, isn't it? I was very, yeah, very lucky when I was at Sky to have gone to four in a row. And now I'm sort of absolutely itching to get back. I'll have to sort of, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I'd love to go back. But it is, as soon as you get there, it's completely wow. It's better than you could even imagine. Just the first hole, it's massive. It's such a huge property. And you get to see those incredible undulations straight away. A big walk uphill to the first and a massive sweep down to the second. It's just like, what a place this is. And you can see, I think one of the main things you see when you get there is that you do have to draw the ball a lot off the tee. I think sometimes you hear that, but when you're there, especially like the 10th, when if you hit it straight, you just go straight direct into the trees. The amount of shots where it does help. And I think that's why you've probably seen left-handers win, because they can control the fade around corners.
Yep.
Bubba obviously twice, Mickelson three times, even Mike Weir back in the day. So, yeah, it's a spectacular course, but I think it is one where I think you love it or possibly you're always going to struggle a little bit. I know maybe Sergio was against that, but I think Sergio's record wasn't as bad as you thought it was maybe when you piece it all together. But someone like Henrik Stenson, I don't think he's ever going to win there. He's never had a top 10. So I do... We'll get on to individual players, but somebody... We've seen in more recent times people take an instant like to it. Spieth, for example. Danny Willett won in his second go. So maybe some of those have had a few goes and haven't won. I'm struggling with.
Are there any trends that stand out? Because you are a trends man. And which stats do you put most stock into ahead of this week?
Yeah, the usual one. Greens and regulation is massive. You look at the winner's stats and you've basically got to hit nearly 70% of the greens. If you're not doing that, you're not winning. You've got to scramble on top of that. When you do miss them, you've got to have high scrambling figures. And the biggest one, Dave, that's never really gets much attention is bogey avoidance. Everyone just thinks, oh, those par fives at 2, 8, 13 and 15, that's where you make your score. You just sort of hang on the rest of the way. Yeah, you do hang on, but you've really got to avoid bogeys. And it's almost, you can really be quite precise about it. I think the last 10 winners, no one's had a bogey or worse count of plus 10.
Right, okay.
So going into that last round last year, I think everyone had already gone past that, apart from Sergio. So sort of Sergio had to win. So it's a good in-play strategy. If you look at the top maybe six in the betting on the final day and some of them have gone past plus 10 in bogey or worse, history says you rule them out and you can pick the guy who's made the least mistakes.
Yeah, people talk about par five scoring when it comes to the Masters, but these par fives are all gettable for the entire field, aren't they?
Yeah, especially 13 and 15.
Especially those two on the back nine.
Yeah.
So par four scoring, I think, is maybe even more crucial because there are some very difficult yeah, par fours on the layout.
I mean, obviously, there's more par fours, so that kind of plays into that. But Danny Willett's the only one who's probably done it a weird way around. I think he was even par for the par fives, which is just really strange. But generally, you've got to be pushing maybe double digits under par.
Yeah.
But even then, someone like Dustin Johnson, I think he was 14 under par on the par fives a couple of years ago, but just couldn't keep those bogeys away, which makes me doubt him because I think he just makes too many mistakes on that course.
Picks then, Mr. Tindall. How many have you got?
I have got... two in the outright, nearly a third, but I'll go with two.
I've got two in the outright and I've got a betting one, yeah, of the supporting markets. We'll talk about the supporting markets in due course as well. Yeah. Go on then, you lead off your number one pick for the Masters 2018.
Yeah, your eye doesn't have to run too far down the betting. In fact, it stops at number one, Jordan Spieth, 10-1.
I must admit, I've not gone with Spieth. I've gone with a couple of outsiders for this event, but he was absolute closest at the top end of the betting.
Yeah. I mean, if you'd asked me a week ago, I was just sort of thrashing around trying to find which of the favourites could separate themselves. And I was quite keen on Justin Thomas for a while. But then, I don't know. You put me off him a little bit. You said, is his short game strong enough? And then when I read his quotes, there was a lack of sort of love at first sight about it.
Yeah.
I think he might be one who... He's come 39th and 22nd, which is a progression, but as I said earlier, other players have done a lot more than that by this stage already. So I think,
yeah.
And that bogey avoidance, will he just get a bit hot under the collar occasionally? So Spieth, I think, is the one. If you said to me that Spieth would go into this event on the back of a third place, given the fact he's won it twice, he's won it once and been runner-up twice, and you can still get a double-figure price, I would have said, yeah, I'll have that.
Yeah,
I know there's a lot at the front of the betting and there's a lot of potential challenges to him, but I think he is the one to beat. 2-1-2-11 is his form at Augusta National. Even the 11th, he was two shots off the lead going into the final round. I mean, he is just amazing at that place. And it's not just his putting. He's hit 75% of greens in regulation there before, which is a massive thing. I think people thought he sort of like hacks it round and then just holds all the putts. He's not that at all. It's a bit of a misconception about Jordan Spieth. In Houston last week, first for strokes gained approach the green. His iron play
is a big stat this week, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
That, out of all the stats, when you're talking about strokes gained, yeah. That could be the biggest.
And he's at the top of that right the week before, right, you know, going into the Masters where he wants to show his best. Yes, his putting is still maybe moving back in the right direction and not at the peaks that it was, but
he's not putted well, has he?
No, but if you look down the years, though, I mean, Garcia was not a great putter. There's lots of people who aren't considered great putters who win there, but what they all have in common is they were great iron players. And he is a great iron player. It's sort of forgotten that I think about him.
I just want to read you a quote from Mark Brody, who is the man that
strokes gained.
Yeah, conceived the strokes gained metric, which is obviously so prevalent statistically in the game of golf in this era. He says that Augusta's greens are more difficult to put than average, but a closer examination yields surprises. Inside of 7 feet, players sink more putts at Augusta than elsewhere. Those immaculately conditioned greens are most likely the explanation. Outside of 7 feet, the green speed and slope leads to more putts. The conclusion is that precision iron shots, especially from 125 to 225 yards, is the skill on which Augusta places the highest premium. Which very, I think is very good. Interesting, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, I think that helps the Spieth cause, I think.
I think it sums up what Augusta is all about.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing, Spieth, some players, Bubba said this, it's all the crazy angles and the on not just tee shots but on putts as well. It suits some people's eye, and it definitely, Spieth has gone on record saying he loves the creative angles that he can see rather than kind of straight lines and roboticness. He sort of sees the curves.
Yeah.
So he loves the creativity there. Maybe that's why Stenson doesn't. Maybe Stenson, you think of more straight lines, but Spieth just loves all that, and he just stands out for me as the one. Just that the confidence he's got at that place. He's not searching for, you know, Rory's got it in his head. Oh, am I ever going to get it done? Spieth straight in there, second on debut, wins it the next year in a canter. Second the year after when he could have won. He was five shots clear with nine to play. I mean, great.
Does that implosion concern you at all?
If he'd never won it before, it would have done. But the fact he won it the year before, no. It was okay. Just like he missed that chance that year.
Yeah.
He can win this again and hopefully this year.
I'm going with Ryan Moore as number one selection at 80-1.
Up there last year, wasn't he?
Here with William Hill. Well, he's been up there a few times. Mm. He's got four top 15 finishes at Augusta. And we've talked in detail about course form being a fair barometer going into the week. And having gone round in circles with some of the guys at the top of the betting, Jordan Spieth was definitely closest. I've decided to put up a couple at prices, starting with Moore, who comes into this in fine fettle as well, having finished fifth at Bay Hill, where encouragingly he was second in strokes gained tee to green, and his iron play, which had been slightly below what we'd expect from Moore, was back on song. Chipping has been pretty decent all season. He just loves Augusta. Has finished top 15, as mentioned, in four of his nine starts at the tournament. Plenty of sub-70 rounds at the course as well, which is another statistic that's reeled out every single year, that you've got to have a sub-70 round at Augusta, including a 66 a few years ago. Leading amateur in 2005. Not incredibly fashionable, and maybe his length off the tee is a negative, but hopefully he can overcome that and contend and make his way into that top seven at the end of the week on Sunday night.
Yeah, very good. I like it.
Second pick for you?
I'll lead it in with a quiz question. Who was third in last year's Masters?
Oof.
Good. The fact that you've made a sort of oof noise is
no
good.
Idea.
Right, it was Charles Schwartzel.
Right, okay.
Charles Schwartzel, i.e. a former winner. Mm. I think to have won this is a massive thing when you go back there. Schwartzel third last year when he wasn't really in any sort of form, but he'd won it previously. Obviously, Bubba won it in 2014, 2 years after winning it before. Spieth was runner-up the year after winning. So I'm looking at a kind of recent winner who might just be a price because I think they can have another big week. Maybe not win, but certainly challenge and get that top seven, which we need for the each way payouts. Adam Scott, 60-1.
Okay.
You sound like underwhelmed, but I'm going to build the case.
Yeah, do build the case, please. Right?
Six top 20s in his last eight Masters,
yep.
Including a win. Ninth last year. People think he might have gone off the planet a little bit, but 13th at the Honda, 16th at the Valspar. And at the Valspar, he was second for greens in reg. Mm. So he's started to come back. I mean, his priorities changed, didn't they? I think he had sort of young kids, so children, as a kind of a dad to take that side away from his golf a little bit. But I think he's really under the radar. Hey, I just like the idea of a former winner and not a really sort of golden oldie like Vijay Singh or somebody. Although even we've seen that with like Bernard Langer,
yeah.
Fred Couples doing their old shtick about being up there again. But I think Scott is someone who's got the class, knows he's won there. Ninth last year, just to remind himself how well he plays this course. I just thought 60-1.
It was a fair price.
But it's certainly a fair price when... I think everyone is big on course form, aren't they, this year? So you look at some of those a lot less than him and you think, they've not done it there. However good their recent form is,
yeah.
They've not got a green jacket, never, you know, and a bank of serious, solid form at the course. I think Scott is under the radar at 60s.
Okay. Adam Scott, Dave's second selection. I'm going with an Adam. As well,
right.
I'm going with Adam Hadwin.
I like that. I like that shout. Yeah,
yeah. It might be foolish because he's only played the course once, but he's got a very similar profile to Danny Willett in that respect.
Yeah,
Willett
sort of
finished
mid-30s.
Yeah, mid-30s, yeah. And then went on and won the following season. And Hadwin finished 36 last year, closed with a round of 70. That round of 70 included seven birdies, which I think is pretty darn impressive, yep. On your first start at a Masters. And recent form is, I think, the biggest indicator to success at Augusta. And it's not a place you go to find your game, is it, Dave, basically?
No.
If you bang out of form,
yeah.
And you rock up at Augusta, this golf course will expose any weakness.
Yeah.
And Hadwin, in his last three stroke play starts, has finished 6th, 9th and 12th. Short game has been great all season. You talked about how advantageous it is to have good scrambling statistics in the season leading up to the event. He ranks 22nd in strokes gained on the approach, 7th in strokes gained around the green. Having had a sight of last year, I think he'll be in the shake-up at the business end. And you look at his strokes gained tee to green in his last three starts, 4th, 11th and 4th. I mean, this is a man that's in full control of his golf ball right now and must be going into Augusta, having had that sight to last season. I mean, in terms of confidence, right at the top end of his confidence. So I just thought 125-1 was worth a few quid each way.
Yeah, there's a big correlation between form at Riviera and Augusta.
Yes.
And he was, what, 6th at Riviera?
He was.
Bubba's obviously won both events twice. There's so many, you know, Mickelson's done it. There's so many. Even someone like Thomas Peters played great at Riviera last year, came to the Masters top five. So Hadwin, and I think the other thing, it's not just you've somehow managed a good week at Riviera. It tends to be you've had a good week with good iron play. And I'm pretty sure I looked at Hadwin's stats at Riviera this year. I think he was 10th in the top 10 for stroke for greens in reg. So I think he's doing what you need to do. And if he can bring that to Augusta this week with that sighter, yeah, I think he could be one of the sneaky names.
Just edges up there, up that leaderboard.
Yeah, maybe just, you know, sneaks into a place.
Yeah, I hope so. 125-1 for Adam Hadwin. I think I probably prefer him to Ryan Moore, actually.
Okay.
We discussed this. So I point each way on both of those guys, but I'd shared Hadwin as the maybe the number one selection this week. Should we go through some of the other names at the top of the market? Because we've got that's our outright picks done, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few close ones, but they'll crop up as we speak.
Yeah, we've talked about Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas in a
Are you no
detail.
On Thomas then?
Well, I'm not a complete no on Thomas, but I did highlight that concern.
The other thing, I think, with you the other week.
And
yeah, it got into his head, I think, as well, that he was trying to be number one.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
So again, that applies this week. If he wins, he goes to number one. So I think that's an added thing. And maybe 39th, you've said with Hadwin and Danny Willett in the 30s on their first go. He was 39th. Was the improvement to 22nd that good? Sort of all right, but does he...
Everyone's saying it's a natural fit, but I don't know if his short game's...
Sharp enough.
Just sharp enough. Mm. We'll see.
I think he'll be up there, but when it comes to maybe the back nine or the, I don't know.
People might see it from a completely different perspective and think this guy should be outright favourite. He's won 8 times in the past 2 years and did improve on his first start at Augusta to his second start. And he's got that X factor, hasn't he? You saw that when he hauled out from the fairway to force Mickelson into the playoff.
And it depends how you read it.
And he's won the most recent major championship. So you can look at it from both sides of the coin.
You could say, play Augusta twice, no top 20s if you were being sort of critical of his performance there. It's I was close to him originally, but I think when I just read his quotes, I don't know, I expected more like thrill of about what he might be saying. Mm. It didn't seem to be there. Sounds like in his head he might just think, oh, this is going to be a tough one for me to get on my career.
What about Rory McIlroy? He's 10-1. He showed his brilliance at Bay Hill, but ironically, it was the club that has in the past been his Achilles heel that shone that week. Gained over 10 strokes on the field at Bay Hill with the putter, which was statistically his best ever performance with the flat stick. And he's obviously got unfinished business at Augusta, having had that meltdown in 2011. And that's a day he called the most important day of his career. Is he going to win a green jacket? Could it be this year? He's 10-1.
We've asked it every year. Could it be Rory's year? I think going in, I'd want him to be leaning more on his great iron play than on his putter, because that could just vanish again, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Whereas his iron play, when he's really on, it's more consistent, but it's not that great, is it, at the minute, I don't think.
No, I agree.
I think it's a weakness.
Yeah.
So I think he's won Bay Hill sort of using the wrong sort of stats that you need to... I just think it's a more come-and-go stat, the putting.
It could definitely be an aberration for
McIlroy.
Well,
if you compare it again, it is a bit of an outlier, isn't it? His form for the rest of the year, it does show that this idea that Rory's best is better than anyone else's best.
Yeah.
It maybe highlighted that a little bit, but I don't think he can get away with medium to good iron play like he probably did at Bay Hill.
Dustin Johnson was half the price last year before he fell down the stairs.
Yeah.
He's 12-1 this time around. But you mentioned earlier on in the podcast, you think he makes too many mistakes. I've said this before to you, I don't think he's intelligent enough for Augusta, because I think he misses in bad spots, and that's why he makes so many mistakes around Augusta National.
Yeah, I will mention that. I did follow him once for 9 holes. No, maybe 8, full 18, because I think I'd back Nick Watney.
I think I backed Nick Watney at the Masters before. I know I have.
I think it was the year Nick Watney, I think it was 50-1 anti-post, and he went off at 16s. Can you believe that? He went off at 16s to the Masters.
Listen, I think I got sucked in as well.
So
never again.
So he was in the same group. But DJ, you could just see that there'd be a pin out on the right and he'd go for it, and you're thinking, oh, don't do that, because I might have had a few quid on him as well. And he just seemed to sort of go for stuff he shouldn't be going for. And I've said this, there's kind of this barrier where you can get to plus 10 in terms of mistakes. I don't think he's ever got better than plus 16, might be 15, but certainly 5 more than you need to.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's random. I just think if you watch him closely...
When you say plus 15, do you mean that's the amount of bogeys?
You add up all his bogeys. Forget the birdie and eagles. Just that bogey count. It could be eight singles and three doubles.
So doubles count as plus two when you're saying others, when you're mentioning triple, those numbers.
Yeah. So it just creeps into often. I kind of know what you mean with that. When I was at Sky, I think I did ask Butch Harmon about Johnson winning. Probably I was trying to dig to see if I was on a decent bet, but he just said he wasn't really listening to him in terms of Butch. Obviously, knows everything about that, that place, and it was like Dustin Johnson. He's got his own way of taking it on, and that way, it's. I mean, he's got a six and a fourth, but I just don't think that final step. I think he'll make too many daft mistakes.
You mentioned Nick Watney being 16-1.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in this field where you think that is a ludicrously short price? Is there a Nick Watney at 16-1 in there?
No, Tiger's the one who should maybe be 20s, maybe.
Right. Okay.
I mean, one of the amazing things you said earlier, you look at the top 10 in the betting, and you've not even got to John Rahm.
Yeah.
And how is that possible?
Well, he's just out of form, isn't he? A little bit.
But you wouldn't have thought that would. No. That couldn't have happened a few weeks ago.
Yeah. Justin Rose is 14-1. Runner-up two of the last 3 years, unlucky to be beaten by an inspired Sergio Garcia on the back nine on Sunday when he was in full control, played great golf all season so far, and if you're just using bare statistics going into this week, he's the one that looks most solid, arguably.
Yeah, I think his greens and red performance at Augusta, they're the most robust figures of anyone. He always hits that 70-plus that you need to be recording at Augusta National in terms of greens and regulation. He just does it in his sleep. But as we saw last year, that's great, but you just need those maybe moments of inspiration. You need to hole a putt here and there to back it all up. And he just couldn't, could he? He just couldn't maybe hole that putt. It's not to say he can't do that, but it maybe highlights the area where he is maybe destined to come up always short.
I think this is about price with Rose. I'm not salivating over 14-1 about Justin Rose at Masters.
I know what you mean, but I think he'll get top seven, in which case it's an each way price, yeah.
Yeah.
But you could just maybe back him for top five even.
We talked about Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
14-1. I don't think we need to speak about him any further. He's won it four times, but he's not won it since 2005.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're talking about him playing his first major in 2 years as well.
Yeah,
over 2 years.
I think if he finishes top 10, that'll be excellent, and hopefully he gives us a thrill and gets near the top of the leaderboard at some point. But I can't see him winning.
Jason Day and Phil Mickelson, both 18-1.
The problem with Mickelson, well, there isn't a problem with Mickelson at all. I've got him at a decent price of double those odds. So I'm a bit reluctant to take that in some senses. But I do think 18-1 is very, very fair, because we haven't talked about Bubba yet, but Bubba's either win or nothing at Augusta National. Mickelson is either win or very close to win. He's very rarely not in contention there. And on the stats this year, his short game stats are brilliant, Phil Mickelson, this year.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no reason why he can't win, although what was he wearing today? Did you see that shirt?
I have seen that shirt. Tiger Woods made a jibe about that shirt, that the only thing missing was a tie. And it was true. It was appalling. 18-1 Mickelson.
Could serve the champion's dinner off that, couldn't
you? I did miss Bubba Watson out. He's 14-1, two-time champion. Plummeted down the rankings last season after a dismal run. Whether it was down to the golf ball he was using, which many people have speculated, and it does seem that there's a definite correlation there, that Volvic golf ball, or whether he just took his own eye off the ball is open to debate as well. But he's bounced back in a big way this season. Two wins, and his price has continued to contract. He's got every chance, hasn't he? I mean, that shot on the second playoff hole in the 2012 Masters, where he works that 52-degree wedge around the trees, from left to right, about 40 yards, that was just one of the most memorable shots you'll ever see in a golfing scenario, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, this is the course for him, isn't it? It really is, but I don't know. When he's won before, I think even when he won second time, he was 25s. Now he's 14s.
Yeah.
I don't really want to back him at that price, because I think with him, there's an element of he might just bomb, where some of the other each-way shorties I think you know almost that you're going to get a definite run. Someone like Rose definitely, I think, is going to give you a run. Spieth will. Whereas Bubba might just flop, and it's too short for me to sort of have that.
I'd almost
rather chuck a 5-10er at him at 14s, and if he wins, great. Mm. Or he's nowhere. So that's my thinking with him. If I was having another pick at the front end, it would be Mickelson, because I don't see how he doesn't contend again.
We'll round this off by talking about Paul Casey. We'll have been through the top 10 in the market. Winner of the Valspar Championship, form figures of 6.46 in his last three starts at Augusta. He looks priced accordingly to me, though. I think that win in the Valspar was helped by him playing so far ahead of the leading groups. Yeah. And I don't see any juice in that price at all.
No, you'd want almost 28s, 30s, wouldn't you?
I think I would.
Given the strength of the top nine above him.
Yeah.
He's almost like a bit of each way available, but he's not, though, is he?
No.
I can just see him again contending, but just missing the putts that others will hold at the vital time.
Are there any others you want to mention before we talk about the supporting markets?
Well, I'll mention one in the spotting market, but I will refer back to his outright price because I think he could sneak a place as well.
Okay. And we've been rambling on for half an hour now.
we've
not mentioned Ricky Fowler. We've not mentioned Hideki Matsuyama, Matt Kuchar. I mean, it's such a stats field this time round. So supporting markets. I mean, looking on the William Hill website right now and on the app, we've got the best part of 60 markets available. Hashtag your odds as well. So if there's a bet that you want that's not on the website or on the app, use the hashtag your odds and tweet at William Hill, and the traders will price that bet up. Where do you want to start in the supporting markets? I've just got one pick in the supporting markets.
I'll start then with the top Asian market, because you've just touched on Matsuyama.
Yes.
I think you can take him on.
I agree wholeheartedly.
And therefore, if you're going to take him on, you absolutely have to take him on with Kiridash Afibanrat.
Yeah, I agree. 9-2.
Yeah. I just think it's a good way to get... I mean, I wouldn't put anyone off for hundreds as an each-way poke on Afibanrat.
Yeah.
He's just better than people think, isn't he? I think because he's kind of... If he was American and called Kyle Andrews or something, K.A., I'm not just plucking that from nowhere... And was doing what? I mean, he's come top five in the last two WGCs, fifth in Mexico, he's tied fifth in the quarterfinals of the match play.
Yeah.
He'd be a lot shorter than 100-1.
Especially with his debut performance at Augusta
That's
well.
That's the thing, I don't really recall that happening.
I can't
So when I checked, it was like, oh, has he ever played? I'll check. Oh, he was 15th, wow. And then you look at his stats, he scrambled really well to come 15th. Again, I read his transcript, and he did sound a bit overawed by it all. He felt like he was sort of, I think he was delighted. Someone like Bill Haas showed him round, and he was like, "Are nobody like me?" And Bill Haas is showing me round, and so he was very sort of humble about it. And I think he was almost just sort of gawping, like many do when they go there for the first time. So to come 15th on the back of that, I think he'll go there now. He's top 30 in the world, can take on these big fields and hold his own against them. I think he's decent each way at 100, definitely. But in terms of really wanting to cash in on what we think is a player who play well, that top Asian market, because I don't really see any other realistic challenges to him, to be honest.
Okay. Kiridek Apibana
9-2.
9-2 in that top Asian market. I do like that bet. I'm going with Rafa Cabrera Bello in the top Spaniard market at 9-2. Now, this might seem kind of foolish because you've got two of the best players in the world to beat there in Jon Rahm, who's 10-11, and Sergio Garcia, who's 11-8. Rahm just doesn't seem to be playing that well, as far as I'm concerned. And I've already spoken on this podcast about not wanting to be searching for your game going to Augusta. So I'm ruling him out, maybe.
And he's got a surprisingly rubbish record in the majors so far. You think, well, why is that?
Yeah,
I think he said he doesn't know quite how to prep. He didn't know whether to play the week before, or so he's not quite hit on a formula that's worked.
Yeah, well, I just think based on current form, I'd be willing to take him on. And Sergio Garcia, it's more difficult to make a case for not ruling him out, but suggesting that Cabrera Bello can finish ahead of him. But he's defending this week, and that comes with its own pressures, lots of time commitments in the lead up to the event, hosting the champions dinner, etc., etc., etc. And I just get the feeling it might be, it could just be a letdown for Garcia this week, having won it last year. So I can see him finishing 30th to 40th, right, something like that. And I think Cabrera Bale's really elevated his game in the last couple of seasons. He's got decent form in some of the events in the Far East that correlate well with Augusta. Shone on his first Masters start as well a couple of years ago when finishing 17th. And he ranked 7th in strokes gained approach on the PGA Tour, albeit that's a small sample size this season. And his putting might not be as exposed at Augusta as it could be elsewhere. So I just thought he offered a bit of value in that market, a 9-2 Cabrera Bayo to be top Spaniard.
Yeah, jolly good.
Go on.
I'll go in with my hashtag your odds. They're kind of bracketed in prices, these, and I've found one at 16-1 to 45-1.
Okay.
Although it is the 16-1. but I think this is a very realistic thing that's being asked of us here. Spieth, McIlroy, Thomas and Mickelson all to finish in the top 10.
Including ties,
so that helps.
Yeah.
About to make an Afi Bownrat joke then, the old classic. Not including Thailand. Spieth, McIlroy, Thomas, Mickelson. If you'd had that bet in 2015, you've got the winner Spieth, you've got Mickelson second, you've got McIlroy fourth. Yeah. Thomas didn't even play.
Yeah.
So you just look at old Masters leaderboards and they are just littered with the best names. You get the odd surprise one in there, but it's the smallest field in the major. I think this is one of the smallest fields in years, isn't it, this time round? Mm. So to get in the top 10, I know that four players have got to finish in the top 10, but as you said, there could be a 15-way tie for 10th and you're still collecting.
Yeah.
Spieth, he's my main pick, absolutely. McIlroy, four top 10s, the last, even though they're backdoor ones some of the time.
Yeah.
At least he's solid there. Mickelson, I've talked about, really like him. Thomas, obviously, I've picked out some little faults that stop me from backing him to win, but I think he can certainly get a top 10. Mm. To get 16-1 on that, I think that's a big old price for something that I can see being a very realistic thing.
One market that I did have a look at that I wanted to have a bet in but couldn't quite pull the trigger was the top debutant.
Yeah, I found that tough.
Because I like Tony Finau and his chance at 4-1. It was just maybe that touch too skinny.
Yeah, that's what put me off.
Tony Finau leads the tour in driving distance, and his wedge game and short iron game has been fantastic this season. And I think he will take to Augusta like a duck to water.
Yeah, I can see him finishing tied seventh.
Yeah, I really fancy him playing well, Finau, at 4-1. And then I was thinking Dylan Fratelli is another one in that market, 8-1 that I quite liked. And I thought Patton Kizzire could have a decent week as well at 8-1. And I just kept on looking through the names. I did want to side with Finau in a market, but maybe just 4-1, slightly too skinny. But if you're looking to put together maybe a Yankee or a lucky 15, a lucky 31, whatever, in those top player markets, I wouldn't put anyone off Finau at 4-1 to be top debutant.
I think before I looked at the market, I was looking for him and I was somehow hoping there was a couple of debutants who I'd forgotten that they were playing it for the first time, but he's probably the sort of best known. I mean, there's Xander Schauffele who's playing it for the foot, but I was hoping there's maybe a couple of years ago there was like a Justin Thomas or like Rahm last year, but there isn't anyone really taking a chunk out of the market.
Yeah, I get
that. So that 4-1 is a bit skinny, I think.
Does that bring us to the conclusion of this podcast?
I will just mention the hole-in-one market because I know it's one casual punters like to play.
Yeah.
And there's been plenty at Augusta National, but it's 4-6 for any hole in one.
Yes.
But we can do better than that because you can also bet which hole it comes on or which day, I think, as well. Well, of the last 16 hole in ones or holes in one at Augusta National, 14 have come on, out of the last 16 have come on the 16th hole.
Yeah.
Which obviously we know is a bowl on the final day. Mm. Matt Kuchar did it last year. So it's 11-8. That you get a hole in one in round four. That's when hole in ones happen.
Yeah,
you might even get lucky. There might be one on one of the other par threes, but certainly It is a good, it's a fun final day bet. Maybe your other bets have come out, have gone out of contention.
Yeah.
And you can just keep your eye on that 16th and just cheer it on, and someone might land you that 11-8. And even though statistically it's a short price, in terms of that hole and what's happened in previous Masters, and 11-8, is it, certainly it gives you a sporting bet.
Who's the player you don't want to win? Who would it frustrate you most if they came out on top at the Masters?
I guess Rory, because when he does win, or if he does win, you kind of will think, well, that was always going to happen, wasn't it? You know, that guy there who led by four in 2011, he's got the game for it. You look at his stats there down the years. He's had one bit right and the other bit not right, but he can do all the bits you need to do. Mm. It's just a question of putting them together in the same year. So if he won, any year that he wins, I'm going to think, oh, should have been on him.
It's got to be Jordan Spieth for me. I know you've gone with him, but if I was to pick one at the top end of the market, Jordan Spieth came within a whisker of being a selection for me at 10-1. Don't forget about that super bet boost here with William Hill. You've got three of them to use in the outright market. And if you click on the player's price, you'll have the option to boost that player. I think I looked earlier and Tiger could be boosted from 14-1 to 17-1, for instance. Jordan Spieth, 10-1 out to 12-1. So there's plenty of options with that super bet boost here with William Hill. Three of them pre-tournament and one of them in play per day as well on the outright market. So that's a good initiative from William Hill. Let's recap the selections then before we wrap here, Mr. Tindall.
Yeah, so in the outright market, Jordan Spieth at 10-1. I'm going to go 2 points each way at 10s. And also Adam Scott at 60-1. I'll go a point each way.
I'm going to go a point each way on both mine. Ryan Moore at 80-1 and Adam Hadwin at 125-1. And something that Mike always used to say on the podcast as well, it's well worth waiting until Wednesday to play show bets. I'll put this podcast out. You'll be listening to this Tuesday night, no doubt, or Wednesday morning. Do wait with William Hill because you will get some pushouts on Wednesday. And the supporting markets, Dave?
Yeah, I'll go 2 points win on Kiridash Afibarnrat being top Asian player at 9-2. And I'll also take that hashtag Yorod special about Spieth, McIlroy, Thomas and Mickelson all finishing in the top 10, which includes ties, and that's 16-1. I'll have a point on that.
I'm going to play a point on Rafa Cabrera Bayo to be top Spaniard at 9-2. Dave, as always, thank you for your company.
Yeah, it's been fun, hasn't it? I just want it to start now.
I'm so excited for this major championship.
The only thing we haven't mentioned is first round leader, because at the time of recording, it's just come out, hasn't it, the first round leader.
That market's just
come
out.
I'll tweet something.
Yeah, make sure you do. Make sure you do. I think Tiger's playing with Mark Leishman and Tommy Fleetwood, isn't he, in the first couple of rounds.
Rose has been leader or joint leader three times, just to mark your card.
Charlie Hoffman's always won, isn't he?
He's won, yeah. And Spieth as well. He's started fast. There's a few who do tend to come out of the blocks fast.
Keep your eye on Twitter then for Dave's first round leader bet at Dave Tindall Golf. You can follow myself at D Kellner. Keep up to date with all the latest at William Hill as well, ahead of the Masters 2018. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed it immensely, and do provide your feedback to us on Twitter as well. Good luck if you're having a Masters bet in play throughout the 4 days with William Hill as well. Enjoy it. Should be something special, this first major championship, with so many converging storylines, and we're betting 10-1 the field here with William Hill. For myself and Dave, thank you for tuning in, and we'll speak again very soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.